and welcome to Inside Education. You can visit us online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. On this week's programme, we speak to the General Secretaries of our three teaching unions to preview their respective 2012 conferences which take place this week. My colleague Barry Hennessy has been speaking to Pat King of the ASTI, and I spoke to Sheila Noonan of the INTO and to John McGowan of the TUI. We'll begin with the TUI. Their annual congress will be held in White's Hotel in Wexford from Tuesday to Thursday this week. When I met up with John McGowan, I first asked him to summarise the main issues for TUI members at their 2012 congress.
There is now, of necessity, a focus on new entrants to the teaching profession. And that particularly so because, as of today, somebody who this morning, for the sake of argument, were to enter the profession, would be paid two-thirds of what a colleague who entered the profession 18 months ago is earning. And that is obviously hugely important and damaging for the individuals concerned, but the TUI would argue very strongly that it bodes ill for the profession.
Some people might respond to what you're saying, John, by saying, well, okay, maybe the people who are already in service should accept the cuts so that they're equalised among those and the new entrants. How would you respond to that?
Well, there are those, and it would be a free market philosophy, who would propose a race to the bottom. This government and all of its predecessors would have argued in the context, shall we say, of the initial stages of globalisation, that above all other things, Ireland would not engage in a race to the bottom, that Ireland's economy was going to be a knowledge economy, and that a knowledge economy, by definition, is an economy where you have both a high qualification base and a premium payment base. Now, what we would argue very strongly is that teachers, in common with other public servants, have taken a very significant and a cut in salary, a succession of cuts in salary, that any more is unsustainable, and that the only equalisation that makes sense is equalisation upwards. Because remember, eventually the competition for high quality graduates or for high quality entrants from the leaving certificate, in the case of primary, is competition not with existing teachers, it's competition with other professions of comparable status, with comparable entry requirements, but in good times, with probably far more advantageous salary structures.
Is there evidence that lower salary will reduce the interest in the teaching profession among prospective entrants?
Well, that is the international experience. In the United States, there has been a systemic problem. There also have been very particularly exacerbated problems in given states, which have raced to the bottom. In the UK, we see the rather divisive policy of premium payments rather than a standard payment, so that you essentially get a deficit travelling from region to region as they catch up with one another in terms of making good that deficit. I think it also needs to be borne in mind, and this perhaps is more a post-primary than a primary phenomenon, but a post-primary teacher typically now will not gain permanency until his fifth year or her fifth year of service as a teacher, because they are only getting it under the employment protection legislation. They are not getting permanency for stay. Secondly, the vast majority of post-primary teachers, and this is reflected to us by our membership, are not gaining full-time employment. They are getting part-time employment, bits of jobs. And sometimes, in fact, quite often, when they eventually get permanency, it is permanency on part-time hours. So they have very, very low incomes. We have a phenomenon that perhaps people will find hard to credit, but it is nonetheless the fact. We have the phenomenon now of the poor permanent teacher, poor in the literal financial sense.
Apart from the pay issues, and particularly in relation to the new entrants, that when the Minister for Education and Skills visits the TUI Congress, in brief, what would your message to him be?
Well, we have a very consistent message, and it is that if this country aspires, as we believe it still does, to having a secure knowledge-based economy, which would have a trickle-down effect in terms of the well-being of all concerned in society, we believe that fundamental to that, absolutely central to that, is a high-quality public education system. You cannot have a high-quality public education system without adequate investment. We fully accept that the most significant single determinant of quality in education is the quality of teaching. And we are saying that in order to ensure the quality of teaching, you have to ensure the quality of teachers. And in order to do that, you have to incentivize people both to enter the profession and to remain in the profession.
Is there anywhere, and this is a question he might well ask you, that savings can be made in education, if you were to advise him on that?
Well, we have noticed over the past period of time another tendency, which is the increasing bureaucratisation of education. Increasingly, teachers, and they have this in common with our colleagues in the UK, are finding that they are working a great deal more and a great deal harder, but not necessarily doing the work for which they were trained and which they love, which is the work of teaching. We now have five different species of inspection, each one of them attended by quite excessive bureaucracy, so that teachers and school principals end up explaining themselves to those who should already be fully aware of what is happening. The inspectorate should, of course, ensure that what is happening is consistent with the best standards. But to have to explain it from first principles, which teachers increasingly are having to do, seems to the very least, to say the very least, excessive. There also is an increasing tendency to require people not simply to plan for teaching, which is wholly and completely required, and with which we have no problem whatsoever, but to be micromanaged in that planning for teaching. And some of what I suppose I would term the sheer magic that animates the job and that animates the teaching and therefore the learning is being lost, is being suffocated by this. And bureaucracy always has a cost.
The Teaching Council has appointed a new director. What advice would you give to that director?
I think the advice to the director and to the Teaching Council, Tomás, I believe, has been appointed, Tomás Rourke. And first of all, I should say that I wish him the very best in what is an extremely important position. And he comes with great credentials, and from our perspective, the expectations are high. So no pressure there, if you like. But what I would advise is that they advance with prudence. There is a proposal, almost, it has the imprimatur of the department, so it probably will run, that the period for training and teaching for second level would be extended to 2 years. Now, just consider the ramification of that. If you go the undergraduate PDE route, you spend 4 years typically in undergraduate studies. You spend another 2 years without alleviation of fees doing a postgraduate study. That's 6 years without any form of income, followed, as I've said previously, by a very uncertain future, at best on broken hours and low income. Now, if I am the son or daughter of a family with limited income, will I or my family be able to sustain the aspiration that I might have to become a post-primary teacher? I doubt it. And if teaching becomes the preserve only of the relatively well-to-do, then teaching will suffer and society will suffer. So we would say to the Teaching Council, festina lente where that is concerned, be careful.
The annual Congress, John, is how the TUI members set the agenda for the executive for the following year. If you were to look back at last year, what is your greatest achievement that you'll be reporting to members at this year's Congress?
It is a celebration of what our members have done, rather than, if you like, a congratulatory exercise in terms of what this office per se has done. We believe that the union, operating through its activists, has exercised a very, very, not just benign, but positive influence in ensuring that thread of continuity, which I think in times that are otherwise chaotic, is extremely important. We have also managed, I believe, to sustain the hope, to nurture the aspirations that are the birthright of each and every child who is a citizen of this country.
And that was John McGowan, General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Ireland, previewing their 2012 Congress. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website insideed.com. We stay for the moment with post-primary teachers and a report from Barry Hennessy. The largest second-level teachers' union, the ASTI, will be holding its annual convention in Cork. Last week, the union published the results of a survey by Millward Brown Lansdowne, which shows that up to 64% of second-level schools may drop Leaving Cert subjects in September as a result of the budget decision to withdraw ex-quota posts for guidance counsellors in post-primary schools. Barry Hennessy caught up with the ASTI's General Secretary, Pat King, at a media briefing this week and started by asking him about the issues on the agenda for this year's annual convention.
I suppose the two big issues are investment in education and the cutbacks in education, and also the kind of working conditions young teachers are coming into now, and they're both linked. We've had several budgets now which cut investment in education, increased the pupil-teacher ratio, reduced funding for schools. And this has had a seriously damaging effect on the education we're providing for our young people. They have fewer options. They have larger classes. They can't get to do the subjects, choices that they're good at. You know, a young person who does well at junior cert in science, who wants to do physics, wants to become a physicist or wants to go to college and pursue studies in physics, will not be able to do that in some of our schools because the option won't be there. The reason the option isn't there is the pupil-teacher ratio has been cut and schools have to cut back on their options.
You've launched a survey looking at the looking at the effects of austerity in schools going back to the budget in 2009, but more significantly, I suppose, looking forward to the next school year and the aftermath of the cut to the ex-quota guidance allocation. And it seems to be the case, to lay this down, that it's not that guidance counsellors are going to be leaving schools, but it's actually that the implication of that cut is going to be passed down the line to non-permanent teachers, often in mainstream subjects.
What the latest budget cut did was to remove 700 teachers from the second level system. Now, schools are going to have to deal with that, and they'll all deal with it differently. Some schools are going to reduce the amount of time given to guidance counselling, to one-to-one consultations for students who may be in difficulties, for example. But the major effect of the guidance cut will in fact be outside of guidance. Schools will drop subjects, they'll combine 50-year and 60-year classes into one room, and there will be larger classes, there'll be more overcrowding. So that will be the real effect of the latest guidance cut. We estimate that the number of hours per week of guidance that will be lost will be something in the region of 6-7 hours per week less of guidance. But the greater impact will be in loss of critical subjects.
Over the last couple of years, the other second-level teachers union, the TUI, has arguably led the way in campaigning for a maximising of resources for disadvantaged schools and in highlighting the way in which they've been impacted. The fact remains that a significant proportion of ASTI members teach in fee-paying schools. Has your union got any view as regards continued state funding for fee-paying schools?
We have members in 500 different schools. I can name 8 inner city Dublin schools in very disadvantaged areas where we have ASTI members. We do have members in fee paying schools. They are paid the same rate of pay, the same exactly as their colleagues in other schools. So that isn't an issue for us. Our view is that government should ensure that the least advantaged, the schools with students with learning difficulties, with children with who have language problems, should be supported.
But isn't the point that if government was to pull funding, or at least a part of the funding, from fee-paying schools, who could go on and then simply raise the fees to provide subjects? If that isn't done, then in reality it's the state schools that suffer, because they simply can't top up the monies they receive, and they have to cut their cloth to suit their measure.
If every fee-paying school in the country closed in the morning, all of the students attending the fee-paying schools would have to attend non-fee-paying schools, and they would cost exactly the same to the state in terms of salary. So there would be no real saving. I think it isn't a core issue. The core issue is the pupil-teacher ratio, the amount of funding given to schools generally. That is a much more serious issue.
Let's look at the issue of the allowances that are paid to teachers. We're looking at qualification allowances, also posts of responsibility, and of course we're awaiting the results of the government's review of those allowances. Now, if the government says, look, the fact is, under the terms of the bailout for Ireland, we need to save money on these allowances, would the ASTI support a sharing of that burden between serving teachers and new entrants?
Every cut that has applied to public service pay has been applied to teachers. In fact, teachers have suffered more than public servants generally. Public servants had a 10% pay cut, new teachers had a 14% pay cut. So teachers have taken more than their share of the burden. Teachers are paid, if they have posts of responsibility, they're paid extra. Just as if a nurse is a nursing sister or a nursing matron or a nursing manager, she gets extra. Or if a guard becomes a Garda sergeant or a Garda inspector, they get extra. If a teacher becomes an assistant principal or a deputy principal, they get extra. So what we're talking about is the rate for the job. Teachers are entitled to the rate for the job, whatever that is.
But the fact is that it's very possible that the government will decide, OK, we can't cut these allowances to those who are in receipt of them now, because those allowances are part of pay and are protected under Croke Park. So it's going to be, in most cases, younger, newly appointed teachers who will get hit. Doesn't that raise issues for solidarity within a trade union such as the ASTI?
I think that's a very good question. The Croke Park Agreement protects the salaries and the pay of existing employees. We aren't yet certain, but that the government may try to take allowances from existing employees. If they do, we will see that as a breach of the Croke Park Agreement. The problem about the Croke Park Agreement is it does not provide the same protection for teachers who haven't yet commenced teaching. And that is definitely going to be a problem. We're going to discuss it at our conference. It's going to be a problem going forward. We're going to have several thousand teachers over the next few years who come in on a lower pay scale with fewer benefits, and they're not going to be happy. And we cannot tolerate a situation where we have two-tier salary structure. We're going to have to address that. It's a big problem for us.
Let's talk briefly, before we finish, about the Teaching Council, Pat, if we might, which recently has announced that from next year it's going to be reducing its annual fee from €90 to €65. In spite of this, there remains massive hostility among teachers towards the Teaching Council. There's a feeling, rightly or wrongly, that the council isn't doing anything for teachers. If you were the newly appointed director of the Teaching Council, what's the first thing you would do to try to improve its standing among the rank and file teachers?
It's quite true that teachers don't understand what the Teaching Council is about. So there's a job of work to be done by the Teaching Council in communicating to teachers what exactly it is for. I mean, it is there to regulate access to teaching as a profession. And we're happy with that. We wanted a teaching council. We wanted a council where teachers regulated their own profession. And we have that. We have a majority of teachers on the teaching council. But the fact is, the great majority of teachers don't understand what the teaching council is about or what it is for. So there's a job of communication to be done.
And that was Pat King, General Secretary of the ASTI, in conversation with Inside Education's Barry Hennessy. Finally, we turn our attention to the Primary Teachers Union. The INTO's 144th Congress takes place in Killarney from Monday to Wednesday. I met up with the General Secretary of the INTO, Sheila Noonan, during the week, and I first asked her to sum up the main issues for INTO members at this year's Congress.
In the first instance, they can be summarised in two categories of teacher employment and teacher salaries, and there are various subsections to that. In terms of teacher employment and staffing, there's a huge concern about the budgetary decision on small schools. Ever since the Minister made the decision to up the pupil-teacher ratio in those schools, there's been a huge, strong reaction from the teachers, from the communities. And the first motion, I think, reflects the thinking in relation to that, looking for rethinking and a reversal of that particular decision, calling for the establishment of a task force, outlining the impact of such a policy and instructing us to set up a task force to advance this particular case.
What about beginning teachers? What can they expect from Congress?
There may be a theme of potential divisiveness in some of government policy in relation to some of the decisions. And again, in a sense of a perception maybe of urban-rural, and this is in relation to the small schools, and this is a second one now about serving teachers and new teachers. Major anxiety following the budget announcement of a reduction in allowances that this will negatively impact on new entrants. Now, bear in mind, this will be a third pay cut. We had the pension levy, we had the pay cut, and now a proposal in the ether that new entrants coming in next September could be subject of a third pay cut. And that is not a recipe for cohesiveness in a staff room to have people on three levels of salaries, notwithstanding the actual net reduction in income for those individuals. So we will be strenuously resisting that, and I think there will be a lot of support for that.
And I suppose the government will come back and they'll say, well, you know, we have to get the money from somewhere. Is there anywhere you can point them to where they could actually get money to make the savings they want to make?
I think what I will be saying in more macro terms to the minister is that everybody accepts that whether we accept it even with reluctance, that we're in a very difficult situation. I think the choices in terms of expenditure cut and taxation need to be looked at more closely in relation to funding public services. There's huge support for education in this country. It's the strength of Ireland. Historically, it has always been seen as the portal to, you know, equality and advancement. And I think we will be saying to the minister that you have already taken quite an amount out of education, not this minister, but previous governments in the last number of budgets.
The Teaching Council is also appearing on the agenda of Congress this year. What are your concerns and what's likely to be the issues there?
They're twofold. A huge issue for the INTO over the last decade has been the elimination from our primary schools of personnel who are not qualified as primary school teachers. We were very enthusiastic when we saw the Teaching Council legislation. There's a section in that legislation which would eliminate the potential for the state to pay anybody who isn't qualified, called Section 30. We want that commenced completely unamended. We're concerned that that may still have an amendment, and there's a lot of pressure and emphasis here in motions to state that we will not be cooperating with the Teaching Council unless that particular piece of legislation goes through unamended. Now, since the motion was written, there has been a considerable degree of progress, so I think that will, you know, the debate will take that into account. There's a second aspect to the Teaching Council, which is to do to the proposed changes in career entry for teachers, otherwise traditionally known as the probation process. And there again has been quite a negative response by our members in relation to devolving that responsibility onto the shoulders of principal teachers. In an era when schools have lost a lot of support for principals in promoted posts of responsibility, and principal teachers feel that they have already taken on additional workload and are reluctant to engage in an area they will be supporting their young teachers, but certainly don't want to be the chief evaluators for probation.
What advice would you give to the incoming director of the Teaching Council in terms of improving its perception among teachers?
The perception amongst teachers, quite frankly, has been that a lot of the initial work of the council has been really focusing on registration, which people just see as a kind of a technical exercise and have failed, you know, on the ground, are not seeing the delivery in relation to what they want to see, raising, you know, around the professional standards, monitoring the programmes in the colleges of education, monitoring the standards of entry, looking at mentoring, and particularly the continuous professional development. Now, we would be very enthusiastic of that, but there's a bit of an empty box around the resourcing and the support for that. Teachers are paying their registration fee to the council. They would like to see the benefit of that fee being reflected in positive actions that support them in their professionalism.
The Minister for Education and Skills, Ruairi Quinn, will be visiting the Congress. What, in a few short sentences, will you be saying to him? What are your key messages for him?
Our key messages, you know, this is a teacher union conference. We want the pay of our members protected against any threats for a collapse of the Croke Park Agreement. We want him to really work hard to ring-fence investment in education. We do not want to see any further deterioration in class size in this country. And we do support some of his initiatives in relation to literacy and numeracy, but we are concerned about the emphasis on standard, you know, on the accountability and the evaluation, that's not done, you know, against the sort of the professional role of teachers in doing that. We don't want to see a movement towards that kind of narrow evaluation. They would be some of the key messages to this particular minister.
And how can he then ensure accountability and ensure progress on the literacy and numeracy strategy if you are not particularly in favour of say, giving him standardised test results, for example?
We're not opposed to standardised test results, but we don't want it to be the sole focus of accountability and evaluation. Teachers, all teachers now, are doing standardised tests and have been doing so for many, many years, and will continue to do so and use it as part of their suite of accountability and evaluation exercises within the school. There is just a global tendency, a Western European tendency, in relation to narrowing the focus of accountability. We're simply saying that there's a wider, you know, there's a wider range of support that is needed to ensure that pupils can get the best out of that. And some of that includes issues like professional development for teachers, the other kinds of support. There will be a new emphasis on school self-evaluation, and we'd like to see training and support to schools available for that. But look, we have fought long and hard to get our fabulous revised primary school curriculum, which is very broad-based and a lot of emphasis on the whole child. We start reducing, a reductionist approach to the primary education is taking ourselves back a decade, not forward.
The purpose of Congress each year, Sheila, is to set your agenda for the following year. If you were to look back at last year's Congress, what is the greatest achievement that you'll be reporting to your members on based on the agenda they set for you last year?
Well, I'll identify the two areas that I started this interview with, and I suppose the twin pillars of a trade union, I suppose, teacher employment and teacher salaries. I'm really delighted that we are still in the protection of the Croke Park Agreement. There has been a lot of public commentary and criticism about that agreement. There was a lot of concern from our own membership that post the bailout it wouldn't survive. It has survived. It has survived because teachers have fulfilled exactly what it says on the tin and done that. And I think that, you know, we've worked hard to maintain that. That's been a core objective. We've done it. The second objective is teacher employment. We had massive concern, and our first motion last year was around the potential for teacher unemployment. We have worked very hard in our campaigning about staffing, the availability of teachers to retire under Croke Park, the increase in teacher numbers, surprisingly, in the budget, even though, you know, we have seen some losses in the country, we have a net gain, will have secured employment for teachers in September. And I think to measure that against the current economic circumstances, I think it's a very positive outcome for this executive over the last year.
And that was Sheila Noonan bringing to a close our interviews with the three general secretaries of the teacher unions. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guests, Sheila Noonan of the INTO, Pat King of the ASTI, and John McGowan of the TUI, and to my colleague Barry Hennessy. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.